for the first time, the man who fought Aryan Khan's legal battle for 24 days straight. Yes, it was Mr. Satish Manishinde and there were other top lawyers, but the one man who continuously argued in court for Aryan Khan for 24 days has made his first TV appearance. His name is Mr. Amit Desai. He's not spoken to anyone else, though he was doing the heavy lifting. He now joins us on the show. Thank you very much, Mr. Amit Desai, for joining us. I want to ask you, there were many lawyers who represented Aryan Khan, but you were that consistent voice in the court for 24 long days. We saw that happening. I'm sure you also could not manage all of this all by yourself. You had your own team of young professionals.
Sanket, like it happens with all of us, there's always the real backbone of all our teams. And I must say that the youngsters who were supporting us in this team, I think Anandini from Satish Manishinde's office, we've had Harshad and Sohan from Rustan Mulla's office, my own junior Gopal, Shinoy, all of them have done some stupendous amount of work and analysis to get to where we are. And I think, this is something that everybody needs credit, and they more than probably we are only their spokesperson, and I think you should surely understand that.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Mr. Desai, now let's talk about this case and other aspects. You made arguments in the Sessions Court, and then you also made arguments in the High Court. What, according to you, was the point which convinced the High Court that bail be granted, but you could not convince the Sessions Court?
So, Sanket, as you know, the institution, the judicial institution, has an appellate process, and there's a reason for having that process. It's a self-correcting mechanism. Although, we canvass more or less the same arguments before the special court, which didn't, in that sense, cut ice, we essentially came back to the High Court, and fortunately, we don't obviously have the reasons as yet, because we only have the operative part of the order. We don't know which one or many of those arguments have really cut ice with the High Court. But I think, and that's the charm of this whole process, because it self-corrects itself. Sometimes you get bail in the trial court, it gets reversed in the superior court, and vice versa. But obviously, as somebody who's practiced in this area for many years, we do see and the need for valuing the principles of liberty, which are so well established by the Supreme Court for decades. You've often, on your shows, everybody knows the principle of bail is the rule, jail is the exception.
Yeah.
But, it's cases like this which puts those principles into question. And every time, when those principles are resurrected, we are obviously very, very happy and joyous about the resurrection of some very fundamental principles of our jurisprudence. And that's what happens in this process of appeals. So I think time will tell when the reasons are out as to exactly which of the arguments found favor with the High Court as distinct from the trial court. But I think it's ultimately the fundamental principles on bail law, which are fairly well established, but just need to be applied carefully and cautiously and more frequently is what is my view in the matter.
Yes, this is Mr. Desai, very important. Let's put out those graphics of whether it is time to, change the NDPS Act or provisions of the Act. Let's put them on air, because my next question is related to that. So whether it is time for an anti-drug law reform, let's take a look at that. There are certain sections which have been debated and discussed in the legal fraternity. For the first time, they have come out openly because of a high-profile case like this. Section 35 of the NDPS Act 1985 says, the court shall presume the existence of culpable mental state. Now, this terminology is seen as a bit of a disadvantage to all those who are arrested under these provisions. Section 54, it may be presumed unless and until contrary is proved that accused has committed an offense. The exact opposite of the entire criminal jurisprudence system in this country. that you are innocent till proven guilty. But Section 54 says it will be presumed unless and until contrary is proved that the accused has committed an offence. Section 37(1), no accused shall be released on bail unless court is satisfied that there are reasonable grounds for believing that he is not guilty and that he is not likely to commit any offence while on bail. Section 67, officer empowered to call for information from any person. An officer is also empowered to examine any person acquainted with facts and circumstances, which is exactly what we see in the NCB doing. So, Mr. Desai, my question thus is, has there been a misuse of certain provisions by agencies, thereby making the process itself the punishment?
So let me put it this way. I don't think it's fair to comment on the institutional process being a punishment, though these observations have sometimes been made by the Supreme Court while dealing with concepts of speedy justice and speedy trial. But there is a, I think the sometimes the cause of the problem is somewhere else. I think the root cause of these problems is the delay. And what causes the delay in the system? Because, you know, by the time you finish your hearings in one court and you go to the next court and then there's an opportunity in the next court, you've got holidays, you've got a need for filing replies, the doctrine of natural justice comes into play, then the lawyers take a certain amount of time to argue, the judgment gets written. I mean, all this added up, and I must say in this case, whilst we do talk about 25 days, we must recognize that out of those 24 or 25 days, many of those days, nearly about 8 or 9 days, were turned out to be holidays between weekends and the long break that the court had during the Dashara. So that's one part on the facts of this case. But I would touch upon a slightly larger issue here, Sanket, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And that is that when we deal with these kind of issues in the justice system, in my years of experience, I think the challenge is we've got to tackle it at the level, at the root cause. And I think one of the root causes is the question of how do you exercise the power of arrest and when do you exercise the power of arrest. The legislative intent is fairly clear because, you know, we had a significant amendment in the Criminal Procedure Code sometime in 2005, which essentially changed the rule amongst investigating agencies to say that ordinarily in offenses which are punishable up to 7 years, ordinarily you will not arrest an accused. Now, this was actually in many ways drawn out of the constitutional values settled by the Supreme Court over the years. And Supreme Court in a landmark judgment in the mid-90s, which is the Joginder Kumar case, had actually articulated these principles laid down. The challenge we face is that in investigations, these principles are not fully, completely and adequately implemented. So if you tackle the problem at the root cause, then you will have, hopefully will have lesser number of arrests. And if you have lesser number of arrests, then to that extent, the burden on the judiciary to deal with the question of bail is less. And that's one level at which we do it. I must say that, you know, we have larger problems about vacancies in the justice system. But I must say, at least so far as the Bombay High Court is concerned, a very, very serious effort has been made over the last few years to try and take up custody cases and deal with them on priority. We've had judges sitting on extra days to try and deal with these kind of cases. So the system is making a very, very serious effort to resolve these problems. But I think it has to be tackled at various levels, starting from when you start the process of arrest itself. You need to arrest people in so many cases and in all the cases.
Hmm. Okay. Now, Mr. Desai, see, since the topic of this of the big fight is whether the law itself needs reform, I want to ask you, do you think the time has now come for the NDPS law to be streamlined and changed, more suited to present-day realities? Basically, amend the law and have a sort of a reform. And what changes will you propose, for instance?
So, Sanket, let me tell you that the reforms in many ways have happened. In 2001, very, very significant reforms were made in the Narcotics Act, which balanced the needs of the victims and the needs of society. So whilst they retained the harsh punishment and the harsh provisions for those who are involved in the business of narcotics, they changed the law in relation to those who were the victims of the narcotics trade, which is the consumer. So very significantly, and this is a rare event which has happened in the criminal jurisprudence, is that punishment, which was earlier 5 years for consumption, was dropped to 1 year. And the objects and reasons of the legislature was to bring about a reformative process. It recognized that consumers are victims. What it also did was to introduce a special provision which gave immunity for prosecution for those who go for rehab, which is again a recognition of the problem of the narcotics drug so far as the victims are concerned. Over time, and this is over the last 20 years, we've seen the courts recognize this reformative process. I think one thing that seems to have happened recently, which is an interpretation by the courts to suggest that the offense of possession, which is punishable with 1 year, is a non-bailable offense. And there's a judicial interpretation which could be valid. So if you ask me for reforms, then I would say that the one reform which probably needs to be brought about immediately is to provide in the legislature that those who are consumers, the offenses should be bailable because you recognize them as victims. You may even want to consider taking this punishment out for first-time consumers and dealing with them at a level of treatment rather than putting them in jail or making them offenders and they have the stigma of a criminal case against them. And you would have seen in society that to a large extent, you're seeing the younger generation and the youth experimenting with these kind of drugs. Now, when they are in the process of experimentation, you talk about a reformative process. Do you begin their lives and careers by stamping them as criminals? Because the moment they're arrested and they go through this process, they are deemed to be criminals. So, you talk about their travel, you talk about their college education, you talk about any kind of application you make, and there you have to disclose the fact that you've been involved in a criminal case. Now, you've got to rethink some of these issues, and that's where I think one of the recent developments which I noticed in the media was the comment or the note from the Ministry of Social Justice suggesting the decriminalization of the consumer provision. And I think that's really a step in the correct direction, because we must recognize that the youth of today are very capable, very competent, very educated. They know what they're doing. And if they wish to experiment in something which the legislation says is wrong, then give them that initial opportunity to not be categorized as criminals, but treat them as if it's a disease. Deal with them in that form rather than to bring them into the framework of the criminal justice system. And I think that's an important message and a movement that's necessary.
Okay.
And you've read about it, that even in the United Nations recently in December 20, there's a rethink so far as cannabis is concerned. And those issues are pending before the government for reconsideration as to whether cannabis can be taken out from a dangerous drug and dealt with very differently. And India was actually a signatory to that proposal. So the policy discussion is in the right direction. I think the legislative changes need to move faster. And pending that, I think the NCB officers need to be sensitized to these realities to see how to exercise the power of arrest in relation to such people.
No, while you're saying that,
legislative changes actually take place.
Yeah, Mr. Desai, while you're saying that comment that you made about NCB, see the reality, and I'll talk about this case only because you argued this in two courts. In the case of Aryan Khan, the Narcotics Control Bureau started by calling this a case of consumption, recreational consumption of drugs. And then later, this became a case of some sort of a, peddler on the prowl or him conspiring with one person who could be a part of an international drug cartel. Do you think that an attempt was made to shift the goalpost? And this must be happening in other cases as well.
No, we dealt with this very clearly in the course of our argument, Sanket. We have very categorically said that this allegation is false. There is absolutely no basis for an allegation that any of these people, not just Aryan Khan, because they're all young kids coming from good families, have no need for getting into the business of drugs and narcotics at all. So none of the three that we, and I saw the record for these three, which was all, they were all arrested together. I don't think there was any basis for an allegation for international drugs, drug trafficking or drug smuggling of any kind whatsoever. So that was one part of it. So far as the other part of the question, sorry, you asked me about the international drug peddling. And sorry, they did not really allege that any of these people were peddlers. But, you know, bear in mind one fundamental principle. When there is a consumer, the consumer is obviously acquiring the substance from somebody. That's a necessary concomitant of the act of consumption. So just because you've acquired it from somebody, you don't become a peddler and you don't take the liability of the peddler who supplies to you. So you might say that as an investigative agency, they, because it's their job to actually go to the root cause, which is the original supplier or the smuggler, they need to go through this process. So they will ask a question of a consumer that from whom did you acquire it? That will take them to the supplier who may be a peddler. And from the peddler, you go to the wholesaler and then you go to the smuggler or the manufacturer and et cetera, and you go up the channel. So that doesn't make these consumers the peddlers or the dealers or the smugglers. They're just still consumers. And what does happen in real life, at least you see in urban cities, is a lot of these kids are just sharing amongst themselves. I mean, they don't become peddlers because some friend is supposed to have a little bit and gives it to them. So I'm, and this is not to suggest that that's what happened in this case. But I'm just telling you that that's why none of these events actually have happened. But I'm dealing with the principle of law. How do you then make an allegation that a consumer becomes a peddler? You can't.
Okay.
And you can't just because one friend may have shared with another friend doesn't mean that that other person who has shared it becomes a peddler merely because he has shared it.
Okay. Okay.
So there may be two consumers. They're just friends. So you have to, that's the reason why it's important for the authorities to be sensitized to the realities of society, what's happening around us, and distinguish between the consumer and those who supply to these people.
Okay, my final question, Mr. Desai, you know, in this case, Aryan Khan had the luxury of lawyers like yourself. By the way, there were many, but you did that heavy lifting and congratulations for that. But do you think this is the sort of legal muscle which will be available to all? And let's think of those who don't have this sort of legal muscle.
That's very nice of you. But I must say that we had a big team. We had Satish, who was also part of the team right from the day one. And, you know, we can't forget that they were all there. Satish is also a very senior lawyer. And he's been supportive of this whole process.
There were lots of lawyers.
But,
I agree.
I mean, we certainly did a fair amount of the heavy lifting. And, well, you feel good when you come out with this kind of a success. But I must tell you, my greater desire, if I might say this, is that if this approach is the beacon for the subordinate judiciary to, as you started, you asked me the question, for the subordinate judiciary to deal with other people who don't have the same wherewithal and ability to fight these cases.
Correct.
And make sure that these established principles are regularly followed, because then you don't need people in custody for long periods of time. These are very quick matters. These are very short matters. And if this is the beacon, if this, you know, throws the light on all those other cases that are pending there, so that courts at least understand that this is the direction and this is the approach that needs to be taken. I think that's, I think, the bigger issue for me. And that, I think, is more important. Then, of course, Aryan, for Shah Rukh and for Aryan and everybody, you know, he's out. He's going to come out soon. But I think as a professional, you got to look at a larger issue here.
Absolutely.
And I do hope that it actually helps changing the system.
Let's hope that there is a change so that, you know, not more and more people have to struggle for bail for something as basic as this. I'm not saying that they are innocent, but the law has to be applicable, commensurate to the crime.